Civilization are moving into a new way of being, accessing more of our potential, potential that's been in us and dormant, but now is being activated for many different reasons. We're moving into a new level of awakening, and parts of who we have been that have been asleep are now coming online. So tonight's guest is someone who's helping to bring that level of consciousness in to our human being in a very particular way, in a very special way. She works with the voice, and particularly how voice is a vehicle of consciousness, the human voice. And her name is Lynn Singer. She has voiceworks.com. And Lynn, welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you, Alan. I'm happy to be here.
And I want to tell people, you have been coaching me, and I feel like I am a little more relaxed in my voice, a little less New York kind of sighted, you know, New York slanted, and more general. At least, you know, from the work I'm doing with you, I can feel more open.
Deeper, deeper. The voice is deeper in your body too, right?
Well, I think, yeah, thank you. And the important thing is, how do you feel we're going to access more of our human potential by becoming more conscious of this vehicle of expression, which is the oldest vehicle of expression, our voice?
Great question. I think that anything we can do to tap into a fuller sense of who we are will help us to create the power that we're stepping into, so it doesn't overwhelm us and we can ground ourselves. People get very frightened and very unglued when they start to feel the power that's in them and the power of their voice. And it's not just women. A lot of women feel this. They can't stand up for themselves, as this is a universal problem on the planet. The men, too, feel the power of their voice, and it scares them to say who they are, mean what they say. And once we can sit in that, it helps us to deepen the connection to our unconscious, our subconscious, and our imagination. The voice is a very powerful vehicle. Some people, years ago I was reading a lot about channeled material and about the voice, and one of the things that was said was that the Egyptian priests actually helped the workers raise the 5-ton blocks to create the Great Giza Pyramid. I mean, just as a metaphor, that's astonishing, right? How we can access ourselves in that way with this enormous sense of breath and the depth of who we really are beyond our physicality. We tap into something so powerful. In the beginning was the word, the music of the sphere. I think you know about that, right?
No, it's all vibration. But what you're saying and what I've heard you say is that everyone, when they're born or in their development, has a beautiful voice, has a perfect voice. And so what happens? Where does that go south? Or where we lose that perfect expression of ourselves?
Well, I think we lose it when we're confronted with the world, when when we begin to close down for whatever reason, we close down in our chest, we close down in our solar plexus in the chest, we close down in the belly where the hara is, the power center, we close down in our mind. You know, how can we stand up against that parent or that teacher or that bully or whatever it is? And everybody is different, as we know. Some people stand up very strongly, even when they're not backed by the environment because of who they are, what they've come in with. But many people really fold. And then the voice turns in on itself. Now, the voice can be accessed quite easily, usually, with everybody. When they're speaking to animals, when they're speaking to children, after making love, when we wake up in the morning. Sometimes when people get very sick, their voice opens. Not when they get a bad sore throat, but just feeling heavy and tired and needing to rest, suddenly, whoo, goes into their body. And one of my clients found her voice when she was 9 months pregnant, because everything drops. Everything drops in the body.
So finding the voice, that's what you're saying. Finding the voice that's actually there inside of us.
But we're speaking about two voices in a way. Because right now we're speaking about finding the undefended voice. Because I think most of us walk around, if we are not conscious about how we're using our voice, it's defended. It's, you know, we close it up and we do all these very strange things with it. We're holding in our throat. We're holding in the back of the tongue. We don't know how to use language. And all of these things are really, really important. They're important for the world. They're important for the communication that we have with people that we love, with people we don't love, with business, with raising children, with whatever we are doing in the world. But I also think there's another voice in us, that when we start to do spirit work and we open, all spirit practices are connected to breath. And when you start to work in any kind of spirit practice and connect it to your breath and connect to the practices of the spirit, something else happens with your voice. I hear it in yoga all the time. At the beginning, there are certain voices, and at the end, when we chant, there are other voices.
You said something before, and I think it goes back to what you just said about in the beginning was the word. I know that's in the old gospel. But what does that mean? Because doesn't there have to be a whole world in place, a whole mechanism in place before there is a word? I mean, isn't the word a kind of byproduct of a universe already in creation? So how could in the beginning be a word?
Evidently, apocalyptically, that the world came into being through sound. And in the center of the universe, the music of the spheres, what Pythagoras, who was a mystic, who had a community of mystics, who evidently was so bright that he had to wear a veil because people were frightened to look at him. This was true of Moses too, in my readings, never having encountered Moses or Pythagoras so far. But he was able to hear the center of the universe, what he called the center of the universe, the Om, which he called the music of the spheres. So that's my understanding, that sound created the universe.
I see. So the universe, everything is what you're saying is vibration, and
yeah.
and human beings
yeah.
have a core vibration. I mean, in a way,
bravo, bravo. Yes.
And nobody in a way has the same voice. You know, I hear my father has died, but sometimes I hear old recordings of him, and it's like, that's, I mean, it may not have been his his deep natural voice, but I can recognize that voice, even though the person's not here, the voice is still here.
Right. Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I know. I have a recording of my mother. Only one. And it's a very distinctive sound. And just like all of us are like snowflakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That our voices are like that. Our voices are completely unique to us. But we have a power in our voice, in the reality, I mean, people sing opera. This is an enormous gift. And it's also physically, it's like running the marathon to sing one opera. It's a huge feat. People actually cannot do it more than a few times a week because mucus builds up in the cords and it's bad for the body. And they can't use the cords if mucus is building up on the cords after singing so much for so long. But the enormity of that, to me, it's an incredible metaphor when I hear a great opera singer or a great cantor, a great singer of any sort. It's my name. It's a great metaphor to me about just the beginnings of the kind of power. I have not felt all the power of the voice that I want to before I die.
My own voice.
I know there's another realm yet for me.
You have a voice. People are always complimenting you on your voice and saying, wow. And of course,
Thank you. Yes, I'm always. I mean, it's the object. It's my work. It's, what has brought me the world. But I think there's another layer of divinity, of spirit, of wholeness, of power in the best sense of the word, of really holding some very large vessel of sound that I've yet to discover. I think it's never ending.
No, I'm sure it's not. But you say it's divinity because if everyone does have their own unique frequency, the closer we get to that uniqueness, then the more we are speaking the voice of the universe.
Right, and we can get closer to each other.
How do we get closer? What is that? How do we do that?
Well, I think just by doing what you're saying, by what we're talking about, that the closer we are to our real self, connection to the divine, then we're closer to everybody and everything, right? If we're all one.
Oh, I see. So as the divine comes through us with our...
Right.
We connect to other people. So then how do we use this? I mean, we're talking in a way one-on-one and you train people and you help them access this. But let's talk in a bigger, broader sense about voice and consciousness and evolution and the arts and... How do you fit that into a bigger, bigger picture?
How do I fit the voice into that bigger picture?
Well, yeah, how do you fit the voice into evolution as a race? I mean, sort of what we've been saying, getting closer to our divinity, but I think you have an even bigger picture of that as we come to appreciate the arts more and the quality of what it is to be an artist and a poet. We expand the platform of what it is to be human.
Wonderful. Yes, I think that's true. And I think that the art, a lot of people are complaining from all of the texting and all of the gadgets that we're losing art, we're losing poetry, we're losing philosophy. But I heard Jean Houston say recently, I was watching her, and she said it's going to move to another level. And I think that's very exciting, and I can't wait to know what that is, because the voice is the voice, but when we have our own voice and we allow it to come through us in terms of sound, of just what we're saying, and it gets very strong in us, our ability to communicate with others through language gets deepened and much clearer. And I know that when I've worked with actors, when I've worked with anybody, with actors, with business people, with anybody, that when I work on bringing the aliveness of their emotional life to their voice, and I ask them to write about their voice, they all write amazing things. So I think, you know, they'll write about like a moment when they lost their voice. It was a crucial moment for them when they betrayed themselves, or a moment when they created their voice, or they really let themselves be heard with all of their fullness and who they were. And when they write about this, not being writers and saying, well, I don't know how to write really in a poetic way, they are magnificent. So I think it's going to expand the voice in many new directions. And I'm just waiting to see where that's going to take us. With this new generation, you know, this new digital generation is going to take us somewhere else, and the voice is going to follow. But I still go back to this larger space through the study of breath. Mm. The study of breath in spirit can move you so deeply into another world, into a dream state, into a way of being with yourself through that dream state, through the sound. I mean, look what the shamans do, how they use voice to bring in the spirit and to take out the spirits, and the dance that is done in almost every culture. I mean, there's so much connected to sound, to movement, to voice. Mm. And it's going to get bigger. And the more we do it, the deeper it gets in us. And the more we're able to feel a powerful connection to who we are. And it might be a kind of connection that we can't even quite verbalize. The way great poetry is, you sometimes can't, it's ineffable. You can't say what that line of poetry really meant intellectually, but intuitively you would completely understand it. I think the voice can lead us into those ineffable places as well.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I just was thinking about in ancient Greece, you know, they had the what they would call the rhapsodies, who would recite poetry.
Yes.
Recite Homer as an art form. They were the reciters.
Right. And that's right. And ancient Greek was ancient Greek, when I've heard just a couple of notes of it, it sounds like flamenco or something. And it's very, very dramatic. And Homer was spoken, but ancient Greek, when ancient Greek was spoken through Homer, evidently, it was more like sound, more like music.
Well, there's a great dialogue of Plato, Socrates talking to Ion, I think, I-O-N, about him being a reciter of Homeric poetry. And he says, you know, you don't even know what it is that you're doing. And he goes, of course I do, because I'm saying this poem. And he goes, no, the gods are using you as a mouthpiece.
There you go.
That's inspiration, and then, of course, it has to do with the breath, too, to rest.
But I think that's what I'm talking about. I think that when you can open to that level of being, when I was on stage, I used to feel like I had an orchestra around me.
When you were acting?
Yes. My voice was, it felt like an orchestra was surrounding me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the best way maybe to demonstrate exactly what you have been talking about is maybe giving us some poetry. I know we didn't prepare for it, but if something comes to mind, it doesn't have to be the one you've done on the television show, but anything that, or even some of the things that you've learned by following Richard Burton's work, who I know you've loved as a speaker, something like that just demonstrate the beauty of the presence of word and sound and being and divinity as a gestalt of essence, you know. If there's something.
Well, I think I would do the Eudora Welty that we've done before.
Yeah, you, do that. I love listening to that because each time you say that, I get another piece, and I get a piece as what you said about Homer in a way of pure sound, and the pure sound is then also a vehicle for the essence of what it's saying beyond the words. You know, this whole thing about form versus content. Well, it's
right.
Versus the actual words that are being communicated to me. Yeah, I'd love to hear that. If you take your time, breathe, do all those things you're known to do. But give us a little background about what you're going to say and who Eudora Welty was, and let's everyone.
Okay. Eudora Welty was a wonderful writer of short stories and essays, beautiful essays on writing. Really, actually, extraordinary essays on writing. Maybe some of the best essays ever written on writing. And she was a Southerner. And I think she, I don't know what her dates are, but...
around 1930s, 40s?
Yeah, I think in the 30s and the 40s. I think she was a photographer as well. So she wrote a book called One Writer's Beginning. And it's a little volume, I don't know, maybe 80 pages, about her, what made her into a writer. And in this one little passage, I love this little passage, so I'll quote this for you. At around age 6, perhaps, I was standing by myself in the late summer day when the sun was already below the horizon and the rising full moon stops being chalky and begins to take on light. There comes a moment, and I saw it then, when the moon goes from flat to round. For the first time, it met my eyes as a globe. The word moon came into my mouth as though fed to me out of a silver spoon. Held in my mouth, the moon became a word. It had the roundness of a Concord grape. Grandpa took off his vine and gave me to suck out of its skin and swallow whole in Ohio. The moon became a word.
The moon
it dropped into... Amazing, right?
It's so sensual. When I was hearing it, I didn't realize how sensual and visceral poetry, those particular lines are. It's like she is, she's synesthetic, you know, she's mixing her senses.
Yeah, wow. And it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And I have another exercise that I do called Becoming the Word, in which we go through sound so deeply that you really feel the whole word go through your body.
How do you do that?
By a lot of repetition and putting together sounds and a lot of repetition and going then through the whole word, sound by sound by sound by sound, and then to word, but you start to feel it go down into your belly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just remain in your throat, in your mouth, in your head. And this is what this little passage from Eudora is about, how it dropped into her whole body. Held in my mouth, the moon became a word.
The other thing that it's about is, you know, a lot of people talk about spirituality and spirit and consciousness, but what those lines do is actually involve you and stimulate you into the act of incarnation, of the mind, body, soul, being encased in the physicality of form. That solidifies you as she communicates her experience. It becomes your experience, my experience of being. And that is in a way, it's the highest of a spiritual experience. It's a moving, living affirmation.
In the beginning was the word.
But you can say that, it doesn't mean as much.
Right. You just explained it, which was beautiful, Alan. That was gorgeous.
Right, she relates it, and of course, I remember the first time I realized what the moon was. I was driving with my family to Passover. You know, Passover is always on the first full moon after the spring equinox, and I said, "Wow, it's the full moon was rising over like the Bell Parkway there," and it was on its side, big. Sort of yellowish orange with that smile, and there I realized that the moon was a being itself, was a being that was smiling to me on its side, you know. And I said, wow, it's related to Passover. And my family didn't know, but I made that connection, and the moon became a thing that I tasted as well, in a way, not as poetically as Eudora Welty.
But that's a wonderful story. And your description of coming into form by using the language and allowing the language to come into our body with so much sensuality and so much strength and beauty, we are coming into form with it, and whatever that word is coming into form. That was beautiful, Alan.
Thank you. Well, you know, it inspires me, and you inspire me to think along those lines. And the other thing I was thinking of is language. Word is the only thing, in a way, that is inside of you that is then comes outside of you. We think in words, but then the ability to express what is going on internally for it to become an external experience about who we are. So I'm thinking my thoughts and they're silent, although I'm hearing them, and then I'm saying them out loud, and then you are getting a direct experience of my mind, in a way, of who I am.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. And so powerful, and to let ourselves really recognize the power and the clarity of what it means to speak to somebody, to put that language out to somebody, right? And the fact that all words, all thoughts and all words travel the universe to the end of time. You know, we've all been taught to be careful what we think and be careful what we say, but it's really true. And that's another piece I wanted to talk about, how our experience with voice can affect our thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Affect our mind.
That's good, because that's exactly what this program is about. How do we create new realities? And this is the most basic, organic way, is what you're just, so please tell us about that aspect.
Well, I think that when you work with your voice and anyone begins to start to feel the reverberations of the breath with sound, and the sound gets larger in them, and we start doing different physical exercises that release the blocks that have been holding back the true feelings that arrive with the sound and what those feelings are. And the more that gets untangled, and the clearer you are about what you're really feeling when you talk and whom you're speaking to, you start to get clearer. It clears your mind. You know, I can feel it. I can feel it just right now when we're speaking, because I'm listening to you, and we've done this a lot, but I'm listening to you with bigger ears because this is very concentrated, and I'm very clear. I'm understanding. I'm choosing how I wish to answer you. And I think that the more we do that, the more we can train ourselves, our brain, our consciousness, not just our physical brain, but our consciousness to be clear with what we mean what we say, to start to feel the lies that we all do, the little white lies even. They get very, very strong in us if we start to focus how we're speaking. I think they start dropping away. And the other part of this is silence. Pythagoras and Moses, maybe. I don't know about Moses, but I know Pythagoras did in his mystery school. They had a lot of silence. And silence really focuses you in terms of...
I think something, because the way we present ourselves, I mean, we're always talking to ourselves, and the way we talk to ourselves also creates our reality. But
right.
In the trainings that you do with people, if we can talk differently to the world, I think that then affects how we then talk to ourselves. And so
right.
The inner world, which is then reflected in the outer world, then changes. So you're really training people to create different realities than the ones they had. I mean, maybe you should tell the story of your student, Lauren, who was the girl from, you know, Queens that everyone, you know, sort of would imitate because of her heavy accent. And then when she changed the way she started to speak, she started to change the way she thought and act and be and everything. Can you tell us a little bit about that example?
Lauren grew up in Howard Beach, and she got a basketball fellowship scholarship to Wesleyan. And this is, you know, a very prestigious school. And she really was leaving her neighborhood, which is quite small. And she had a heavy Queens accent. And when she got there, her voice and her accent were like party tricks, you know. Talk to us, Lauren. And how do you say water? Water. You know, it all was centered around, but it was centered around that, but more, even more than that, the way she spoke was really about the small town, so to speak, in Queens that she was from, and how she was going to handle this bigger world.
She didn't think there was any problem with how she spoke. I mean, that's how everyone spoke in the neighborhood. So that's.
And now it wasn't even a problem when she was in Wesleyan. It wasn't like they were saying, oh, you can't stay here because of how you speak. But she quickly realized that if she started to sound more like them, it would open up a whole new world to her. And she did. She wasn't doing it fully, but she began to lose her Queen's accent. And we then worked more and more and more to get her into a general American speech pattern that was much, much more beautiful. But it began to change how she was working in business. She began to speak up for herself more. The more beautiful she sounded to her own self, the more courageous she got. And the more the courageous she got, the stronger she got. So it became, you know, the chicken and the egg. And I remember this with myself as well. I was living in a garden apartment with somebody who spoke five languages. But he was nervous about Shakespeare. And I was just starting to act, but I got a lot of attention because of my voice. So I was doing voiceovers very quickly. And I was studying diction, and I was beginning to really understand what general American speech meant. And I remember coming in the door one day, and I could hear Olivier's Hamlet, way at the other end of the apartment. And my first thought was, ah, he's not nervous about Shakespeare anymore. But my second thought was, I sound more like Olivier now than I do New Haven and my family. And I thought, wow, I've lost a lot of that. I had to, because I was always told I was my diction was too high, it was too English. But my first feeling was, I'm of the world. I can go anywhere now. I can go anywhere, and I can speak to anyone in any English-speaking country, and I can go to any country, and anyone who speaks English will recognize me as a creature of the world, and not just...
How did that then change your fundamental consciousness, that realization?
It made me feel bigger. It made me... I'm international now. You know, I'm not from this small pool, this little pool, and that pool that I was from wasn't so little. I mean, it was in a... There was a great university there. There was a lot of diversity in that way. But I was suddenly in the world, and something was opening to me that was so different, and I felt stronger. I felt more beautiful. I felt I could move through the world differently, and that people would listen to me, that people would listen to me in a way that maybe they hadn't listened to me before. And I tested it. I tested it in fancy parties. I was at a party one night with a princess was in the room, and people from the New York Times and many, many people. I was in leotards and jeans because I did not have time to get from rehearsal to this party. And I knew if I did, I wouldn't have gotten there. It would have been too late. And nobody questioned that I was in leotards and jeans because of the way I spoke. And I could feel that, because all of a sudden I came into the room and it was like, I'm going to really, you know, make my presence known. I'm not dressed for the occasion, so I better do something. And my diction got really perfect, and my voice opened, and it was quite an amazing moment for me, because nobody looked at me funny or twice. They all completely accepted me. The princess.
You've held on to that moment. You've kind of crystallized.
Yes. Yes. There was something that happened. It was like, wow. This is it. It's a bigger world. It's a brighter world. It's a world that I can hold because of how I sound, and not because just because I have this unusual quality to my voice, but because I'm learning a new language.
What do you mean, a new language?
I'm learning a different dialect that's more accessible to the world. So people are not going to be listening to how I sound, but listening more to what I'm saying, because I'm using general American speech. So they're not listening to the fact that I have a New York accent or a Texas accent or a Southern accent or an English accent or a French accent. They're listening to what I'm saying.
So when people find their real voice, the essence of what they want to say comes out stronger, is I think what you're...
Yes.
Because...
Well, the real to me means the sound, the actual sound of the voice, but it also means, if there is a lot of regionalism, to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Yeah,
what is it about Shakespeare that is so magnificent and copied and just something to be modeled after? Should I give you my Shakespearean line that I gave you? Television show that I only got through two words of?
Yes. Are we going to do this again? Okay. Sure.
No, because I learned a lot just in that little lesson when I gave you like my little Macbeth speech.
Right.
I said, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last... to the last syllables of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools their way to dusty death. Out, out, brief can. I'm not really giving it a lot of... I'm just kind of reciting. I'm not really giving it the sort of punch it needs, but anyway.
Let's talk about Shakespeare. Oh, boy.
Okay. Yes.
Shakespeare. What was it about Shakespeare that's so incredible? Well, first of all, he was a poet, he was a playwright. So he had both. As an actor, if you say the words with Shakespeare, you really connect to the language, you're going to get the character. That doesn't happen with any other playwright. So he was operating on another level. He truly was operating on another level. When you begin to work with his language, and you work with the poetic values, you know, which we all learned when we were, I hope most of us learned when we were like 10 years old, onomatopoeia, alliteration, hyperbole. There's like 100 of them, but there's maybe 20 major ones. When you start to work with things like this, and you start to work with the iambic, you begin to see, with all poetry this is true, but with Shakespeare it's really particularly powerful, the sounds, how the sounds bring meaning to what he is expressing. For instance, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? I'm going to do that again. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Now, there's a lot of friction sounds in there, right? Sh, 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 z, d, d, d is not friction. Shall I compare thee summer's s and z? So we've got a lot of friction sounds. Now I hear in that line, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? I hear the buzzing of bees in all that friction.
Oh, so that's like the sub...
sub layer, that's input. Right.
But he's giving us a summer's day in that friction.
That's right, in the buzzing of the bees, of the friction of the sound. And he does this all over the place.
That is genius. I mean, of course, but it's brilliant, don't you?
It's astonishing. And when you start, thou art more lovely. Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Temperate. So lovely is very open. Temperate is quite closed with that t, t. The T at the beginning, the T at the end. What does that do? That pulls you in. It tempers what you're doing. So he always does this. He uses the exact word, and he uses words in conjunction. I mean, all poets do this. The poets are, you know, people speak about art, all art aspiring to music, and I think, yes, that's true, but I think all art also aspires to poetry. They have this ability to bring the words together and to find meaning between the words and enveloping the line of poetry in a way that has so much subterranean meaning.
Was he conscious of it? I guess he was, probably, right?
It's so hard to know. You know, I don't think anyone, you're a very good speaker. I've not read anything you've written, but I'm sure you're a very good writer.
I have poetry that I've written that I'll send you that I think you might like.
Okay. I've written one or two poems in my time, but I was around poetry a lot at a very young age. It was a miracle. It was, you know, very important to me. When I was taking a degree in literature, I was living with somebody who is a poet, and he was a young poet, and he was studying creative writing in the college we were at, and I had people around me. There were poets all around. I did not know what in the world was going on. I wanted a degree in literature because I didn't understand what the writers knew. They knew something. They knew something that I, at that time, did not know and could not understand. And that's why I took a degree in literature. It was the hardest thing for me.
And what did they know? What did those writers know?
Well, they had a sense of humanity. There was a secret of humanity that I think, and they, you know, everyone talks about poets naming things, but I think that's true, but it's not exactly how I would want to say it. They're able to move into an essence of the aliveness of what they're talking about, into a very deep subterranean place of of spirit and of the subconscious, you know, and when we read it, we don't always know intellectually what they're saying, but we can understand partly because of those sounds between the words, we can understand what some of the meaning is.
Well, you should also give us that big overview of the difference between vowels and consonants that I think really helps here in understanding language as a vehicle.
Yes, but also in connection to, I want to tell you, and we will do it again with something that helps clarify language with Shakespeare, with any poetry, with any dialogue, really. And I want to talk about that for a minute, too, because these tools will help people be clearer in their communication. Vowels and consonants, it's like male and female. Right. They need to be in equal weight. The vowels carry the music and the melody, and the consonants carry the meaning and the articulation. Sarah Vaughan, who I met, who was amazing to watch and talk to, she would always soften all of her pressure was an age. She would soften all of her consonants, so you only got the vowels for singing, which of course are more important for singing, which is one of the reasons why Italian opera is so magnificent, and maybe why people love it more than any other opera. Because Italian is so fluid and mellifluous to begin with, right?
Right. So the vowels are the emotional capacity. That's the feminine part, and the consonants are the meaning, the intent,
and the articulation,
the intent. Yeah.
Intent.
So that's the male part, and the two. You can't have one unless you're Hawaiian, where it's just vowels. But the two together create that kind of whole brain communication that language does. It's interesting. There's always vowels and consonants in whatever language we're speaking. So, okay.
Most people don't use them very well. They cut their vowels so they're talking very tight, and their throat's tight, and their tongue's tight, and then they don't use the vowels at all, and they don't have any consonants, and you can barely understand what they're saying. And that needs to get changed in order to bring the lushness, the fluidity, the beauty, and the sensuality of the language out. And another thing is that when the voice comes out and when you really touch who you really are, I felt that in my belly when I said that word touch. I saw this line go down to my belly. When you really touch who you are, the voice is either, well, can be sensuous, or very smart. Some people's intellect comes out in their voice. Some people, their sensuality or sexuality comes out. Some people's healing ability comes out through their voice. It's very interesting how different the true voice is. Some people, their compassion and kindness comes through their voice.
Whoever they are, the essence of who they are really comes through.
Comes right through.
I was in Russia once, and I heard Russian being spoken that was just so hypnotic and sensual and beautiful. I mean, quality Russian. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Russian?
Yes.
Just amazing.
I actually had a yoga teacher whose English was really very good, but there was still enough of a Russian accent there. And with the way he spoke English with his Russian accent was magnificent. It's interesting because usually I don't like that. But
we only have 5 minutes left, so let's get to those other points that you wanted to bring out, and also tell people that you give classes and websites and all that.
Go ahead. Tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day. Okay, so let's listen. Let's say, what are the two most important words in that line? Here's a little bit of Richard Burton, the RB work.
Okay, creeps, it sounds like, and tomorrow is a morrow.
Tomorrow creeps. Tomorrow creeps into this petty pace from day to day. So, tomorrow creeps. If those are the two most important words, how does that change the rest of the line? I've heard it very often. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day. You know, the last part of the line, petty pace from day to day, gets the emphasis. And then we can't hear what the line is about.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps into this petty pace from day to day. Then I can understand the line. Did you hear that?
I did. That was good. It was
good. Hear the difference. So this happens with Shakespeare all the time. Shall all... No, what's the line I want? Make me a willow cabin at your gate. This is from Viola. And I hear it as, make me a willow cabin at your gate. Every single word is emphasized. And then we can't understand the line. Make me a willow cabin at your gate. Make gate. Those are the two most important words. But within that understanding of what are the key words that give you the meaning of the line, then we have to bring in all of the poetic values. Tomorrow, tomorrow and tomorrow, tomorrow. Creeps, 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 small, very pointed, after these long words, right?
Mm.
Tomorrow, very heavy. Tomorrow, am I ever going to get there? Creeps into this petty pace. Creeps, petty pace. Alliteration, two very short words, petty pace.
Petty pace actually illustrates the petty pace of what they're saying. I mean, the words themselves illustrate the action of the words.
Of what it means from day to day. Then we get long vowels again, like the vowels in tomorrow and tomorrow.
But so we're running out of time, so just sum it all up, because I want people to hear where you're, you know, where they can reach you. But sum up that little point there, and we'll do more shows for sure, because I'm getting a lot from just listening to this.
Great, I love it. Well, first of all, the two most important words in a line of dialogue, in anything you say, if you're saying a strong line of what you mean, and to then really encapsulate, hold on to the language through the vowels, through the consonants, and make a study, go back and make a bit of a study of poetic values, because that will start to creep into you. You know, the more you do that, the more you read poetry out loud, it creeps into you, and you become more poetic.
And we become more powerful speakers and more powerful in our intention of what we want to manifest in the world.
Absolutely. I think with greater eloquence, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so, and then anything just to sum up the whole idea of consciousness and voice, just to kind of leave people with something?
To change your voice is to change your mind.
Mm. Well, I think I've just changed my mind about something. So, thank you, Lynn. How can people find you?
L-S, Lynn Singer, L-S, Voice Works, with an S, .com.
Thank you, Lynn Singer. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan Steinfeld. This was great.
Yes, we have fun.
Yes, we always have fun, Alan.
Yes, so thanks for being a guest on New Realities, and this will be posted on my website, New Realities, I think under Arts, actually, and also on the BBS website as well. So,
and eventually on my website as well.
Yeah. Yes, so thank you all for listening tonight. This is Alan Steinfeld, as it's been said, on New Realities. And if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. I'm going to go out with Green Fire in the Fire. Sounds right.
waking up in the middle of the day feels like a dream. Walking halls in the middle of the night, not my favorite thing. Waking up in the middle of my life, nothing's what it seems. I feel a fire, come alive. Feel the fire, come alive.